America, enjoyed worldwide. Those five words carry with it so much meaning, even more so this time of year. Annually, for 30 days in April, Jazz Appreciation Month shines a spotlight on jazz music as both a historical and a living treasure. It aims to draw greater public attention to the extraordinary heritage of this art form and its importance to American culture. Created in 2002 by the Smithsonian's National Museum of American History, JAM's main goals have been to stimulate the current jazz scene and encourage people of all ages to participate in jazz, whether it be studying the music, attending concerts, reading books, or supporting institutional jazz programs. Hi, I'm Eric Cohen, music director here at WAER, and over the course of the next 2 weeks, we'll be hearing the voices and music of some of the most well-known names in jazz. My co-pilot for Jazz Journeys is best-selling author and Peabody Award-winning journalist, Reese Ehrlich. For the past 22 years, Reese has also produced Jazz Perspectives for public radio stations and online through Jazz Corner. We're going to begin this two-week journey by hearing from the Philadelphia-born pianist and 9-time Grammy nominee, NEA Jazz Master Kenny Barron. Ehrlich caught up with Kenny recently in Montreal to discuss his latest recording, among other things.
As we sit in the busy press room of the Montreal Jazz Festival, Kenny Barron tells me that he played with his trio for 10 years before they decided to record their 2016 CD, Book of Intuition. It's a collection of melodic and sultry tunes that sometimes contain surprises. Barron's original composition, Magic Dance, starts out as straight-ahead jazz.
It's something I wrote at home. I was just kind of noodling around, actually. I have a little clavinova, which allows you to play rhythm tracks. And so I just put a bossa nova rhythm on and just started playing, and that's what came out.
If he had been thinking about the melody for a while, or if it all just popped out.
It was actually very much in the moment. It was not thought of beforehand, or, you know, the chords weren't worked out beforehand.
How much change did you have to make when you took it to the band?
None.
Just like Mozart, just popped right out?
No, I didn't make any changes. You know, I mean, that doesn't happen with everything.
Of course.
This particular piece, you know, it was just, it came out as it was.
Kenny Barron was born in 1943 in Philadelphia, but moved to New York to find work in the exciting jazz world of the early 1960s. Then he got a big break. Dizzy Gillespie was looking for a piano player on short notice. By coincidence, Barron bumped into an old buddy, saxophonist James Moody, who was working with Gillespie's band.
I ran into him one day on Broadway, and they were working at Birdland. And he told me that the pianist, Lalo Schifrin, was leaving. And he asked me if I would be interested. But I wasn't working. I just got married, and I wasn't working. So, yes, I'm interested.
Did he know your reputation?
I don't think so. Hmm. No, he just hired me on Moody's recommendation. Which a lot of times, if one of the older people, mm-hmm. somebody who's judgment you trust tells you. Usually you trust it. You say, okay.
And I guess if you really messed up, he could have fired you that night or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. That, well, that's yes. Yeah.
But and how long did you stay?
I stayed there for 4 years.
'60s, salsa and other styles of Caribbean music were popular in New York. Barron absorbed the new cultural experience.
When I first moved to New York, there was '61. There was a radio station that always played Latin music, and then there was also Symphony Sid, who had a radio show where he just did Latin music.
So you just heard it?
I just heard it.
You didn't study it or go to Cuba or anything like that?
No, no. I just heard it and loved it. You know, the rhythms were just very, very infectious. They really grabbed you.
And when did you start incorporating that into your performances?
Oh, as soon as I could.
Continued to play and compose Latin-influenced jazz. Here's his original composition called Bud Like.
You could say the inspiration for that particular piece was Un Poco Loco. I mean, it's not a carbon copy, but the inspiration for it, you know, the mood, the feel, was Un Poco Loco.
You can decide for yourself how much influence the classic Bud Powell tune Un Poco Loco had on Kenny Barron's composition. Here's Tito Puente's version of Un Poco Loco. Now listen to Kenny Barron's song Bud Like, from his 2016 CD, Book of Intuition. Barron is one of the great veterans of that seminal period of jazz history, the 1960s. He went on to teach music at Rutgers and Juilliard School of Music, retiring in 2016.
Are your plans to continue playing for the foreseeable future? Any thoughts of retirement?
Till I drop. No, I'm going to play till I can't anymore. You know, so I retired from teaching, but I can't retire from playing. Yeah. Well, I wouldn't know what to do.
On a totally different spectrum is vocalist and guitarist Lionel Leweke. Born in the West African country of Benin, he attended the American School of Modern Music in Paris before earning a degree in jazz performance at the prestigious Berklee College of Music in 2000. A week shy of his 44th birthday, Leweke has already been fortunate to work with Herbie Hancock, Terrence Blanchard, Cassandra Wilson, Charlie Hayden, and Sting, just to name a few. That's not bad for someone who waited a year to earn the $50 he needed to buy his very first guitar.
Lionel Leweke grew
up in Benin listening to African popular music. Then he heard a recording by guitarist George Benson, and he came to love jazz. He even moved to the Ivory Coast, hoping to find work as a jazz musician. You think it's hard making a living as a jazz guitarist in New York? Try Abidjan.
Yeah, I was so desperate that, you know, I didn't have any money, and I need a gig so bad, and there were a club, you know, where all the musicians were Ghanaian, and, you know, it's like a kind of a mafia, so if you're not from Ghana, you're not playing with them, you know. Even if you're good or not, they don't care. So that was pretty much the only place in town, so I wanted to play. So I went there a few nights, and they didn't let me, and one night I was so desperate, I just got there during the break, pick up the guy's guitar and start playing. They almost killed me. The manager said, "Wait, let him play, you know, and once I finished, he was very happy. He said, "Man, you want a gig? You have a band?" I said, "Yes." Actually, I didn't have a band.
Eventually, Lueke got a scholarship to study music in Paris and later at the Berklee College of Music in Boston. He listened to the music of South African vocalist Miriam Makeba and was intrigued by the clicks in the Yosha language. Although he spoke no Yosha, he incorporates the rhythmic clicking into his vocals.
Teach me how to sing and click my tongue at the same time.
Yeah, it's not difficult. I listen a lot to click sound. Singing like Miriam Makeba, you know, whatever I say, whatever I'm saying, I have to, you know. So when I'm singing, I do the same. It's challenging for me, you know, like because I'm singing a melody and then I have the click sound doing a different rhythm underneath, and then I'm playing something on top of that. So it's almost dividing myself to three or four sometimes, which is kind of crazy.
He sings, clicks, and plays guitar, all using different rhythms.
That's just a bass line. You know.
Now, it sounds to me like the humming is going on simultaneous with the clicking. Is that right? You're not stopping to click.
I'm not stopping.
Lueke went on to become a sideman with trumpeter Terrence Blanchard and later with pianist Herbie Hancock. In 2008, he came out with a CD called Karibu, which means welcome in Swahili. The CD features Herbie Hancock and Wayne Shorter as sidemen. Composed his most famous song while a student at the Monk Institute. His teacher, trumpeter Terrence Blanchard, had assigned the class to write an original composition, and Lueke had one day to finish. He wrote Benny's Tune.
I think I started with the bass line. That's how I said. I hear the bass line first, and then the melody just came naturally to me. The way I compose, I write music is I always play. I'm not the type of guy who's gonna go to piano and you know try to write something down. I just gonna take my instrument, just the way I play live, you know, just be playing for like few minutes and record it and listen back, say, oh, I like this.
Lionel Lewicka's CD Caribou is available on Blue Note Records. I'm Reese Erlich with a perspective on jazz.
Just a reminder, more of Jazz Perspectives with Reese Erlich is available at jazzcorner.com/interviews. That's INNERVIEWS. Still to come on part one of Jazz Journeys, conversations with pianist Ramsey Lewis, trumpeter Claudio Roditi, and vibraphonist Stefan Harris as we celebrate Jazz Appreciation Month on 88.3 FM WAER. Thank you. This is Eric Cohen, and welcome back to part one of Jazz Journeys as WAER celebrates Jazz Appreciation Month. To say that Ramsey Lewis has amassed quite the resume in the jazz world would be a serious understatement. Over 80 albums to his name, 7 gold records, and oh, by the way, 3 Grammy Awards. The Chicago-born Lewis joined his first band, The Clefs, at the age of 15, and he hasn't looked back since. He'll celebrate his 82nd birthday just 2 weeks before he brings his electric quintet to the 35th annual Syracuse Jazz Fest for an 8 p.m. performance on Friday, June 9th. Back in the 1960s, Ramsey and his trio topped the charts with classics such as Hang On, Sloopy, and Wade in the Water. But it was one particular song that made it all the way to number 5 on the pop charts that gave Ramsey his most recognizable hit. I'll let Reese Ehrlich take it from here.
Ramsey Lewis had enjoyed success as a jazz pianist for 10 years before he had his first big hit in 1965. He and his group were looking for a song to fill out a new album.
We had all the songs that we were going to record. I forgot the songs, but they were a couple jazz standards, some original pieces, and we were looking for that. The previous 3 or 4 albums, we had gotten into the habit of putting what we called a fun song on a record. So we were sitting in a coffee shop, and in those days they had jukeboxes in the coffee shop, and our waitress said, "What are you guys doing?" And we told her, and she says, "Well, have you heard Dobie Gray's The In Crowd?" I had not. She said, "Well, it's on the jukebox." She played it. And I said, "Yeah, you know, it's an easy melody. People will remember that. They already know it. And it could be fun to do." And that's how we came across that song. That's red and the drums in the background, but actually not only are the people clapping and clapping in time, but some of them were clapping with some syncopation. So it was evidence to us that all were having fun that night.
Crossover smash hit, something rather unusual for a jazz man. Ramsey Lewis went on to do it again with Hang On, Sloopy and Wade in the Water. In the 1970s, like many jazz artists, Lewis Quintet had been using electric instruments. Then he was invited to play at the Havana Jazz Festival.
When I talked to Chucho Valdez, who was the artistic director for the Havana Jazz Festival, he was in Chicago at the Ravinia Festival. He had appeared and we were backstage. He said, "You should come." And so he explained what kind of festival it was, and it obvious to me that it was more of an acoustic kind of festival. And I decided for that festival and that engagement only that I'd put together an acoustic trio and go down there and play it and have some fun with that and get back with my quintet and finish the touring of that year. Well, we had so much fun with the trio down there. On the spot, I asked the guys, "Do you want to be the trio with me and we do some dates and albums?" And they said, "Yeah."
Louis told me he would like to perform in Cuba again when U.S. policy changes.
I think it's a shame that the arts are involved in the political shenanigans that are going on in the world, especially between the United States and Cuba, because there's a lot of music that we could trade back and forth. Cuba has such a musical heritage that could be so important to share with the American people, and especially with musicians. I mean, before the embargo, a lot of Cuban musicians visited New York. Had that not happened, and Dizzy Gillespie not gone to Cuba, there's a lot of Afro-Cuban music that just would not have happened.
In 2008, Ramsey Lewis issued a CD based on his successful Legends of Jazz TV specials. Each artist selected a favorite song. Lewis chose a gospel tune, Dear Lord.
Choice. You're like a sponge. And that's when I started playing gospel music. And I did it 2-3, sometimes 4 times a week. And obviously, my being was impressed and sucked in what was going on, because to this day, it's a genre of music that I dearly love. I played gospel music for about 7 years at our church.
Lewis was born in 1935, but so far he's keeping a busy recording and touring schedule. He's formed a foundation to help youth learn jazz. I asked how he would like people to remember him.
I hope I'm remembered as a fine human being. I hope I'm remembered that I made some contribution to society at large, the world population in some way, in my neighborhood, my neighbor, that people say, you know, he was a pretty good guy, that guy. That's about it.
Well, the contributions that Ramsey Lewis has made and continue to make to the jazz landscape speak for themselves, and we'll all be looking forward to his show at Jazz Fest in early June. One of the many beauties of this music is all of the different subgenres it includes, from Latin and Afro bop to swing and bossa nova. Fusion came into prominence in the late 60s and 70s with the electric groups of Miles Davis, Chick Corea, and Tony Williams, not to mention the legendary Mahavishnu Orchestra. The common denominator in all of these groups? The sheer wizardry of British-born guitarist John McLaughlin. He's become known the world over as a player of great technical virtuosity, speed, power, and inventiveness. In the early 80s, he teamed up with fellow guitarists Paco de Lucia and Larry Coryell, as well as Al Di Meola, The results were simply spellbinding. Reese had the good fortune of catching up with John McLaughlin backstage at the Barcelona Jazz Festival.
John McLaughlin became internationally known as a guitarist with Miles Davis in the late 1960s. He went on to found the Indian-influenced Mahavishnu Orchestra and continues to play straight-ahead jazz. But when he performed at the Barcelona Jazz Festival, it brought back memories of the Spanish influence on his playing. I interviewed him backstage.
They've got such a guitar culture here. It doesn't matter if you play electric, acoustic, slide, take, finger, doesn't matter. They love guitars, like me. It's my instrument. So it's my country in a way. That, let's say, Hispanic music had its first impact on me when I was 13. And I heard Sabicas play, one of the great flamenco guitar players of all time. And I was so impressed with this music. I used to skip school every last Thursday of every month so I could hitchhike down to Manchester and go to this little club, because I had a brother who was at the university there.
McLaughlin honed his love of flamenco when he performed with guitarists Paco de Lucia and Al de Miola on the classic CD, Three Guitars. Told me he had been influenced by a variety of musical styles.
Strangely enough, I started music as a pianist, and when I was 11 years old, the guitar arrived, and simultaneously, I became exposed to the Mississippi blues, you know? Big bluesy, Muddy Waters in particular, playing acoustic guitar in 1952, 53, a long time ago. I was 11 years old, I was 12 years old. Growing up with classical music, because my mom was an amateur classical musician, it was a revelation for me. And it was just a matter of time before jazz came. I wanted to learn to play guitar, but I was living in this little town I didn't even know what flamenco was. It was just south of Scotland. I mean, and anyway, jazz came along, and that was the end. Not the end, because in fact, it always stayed. Because subsequently, I made these adventures with Paco de Lucia, who was one of the greatest flamenco players of all time. And I've been very fortunate to have that association and the possibility to play with him.
Eventually, McLaughlin mastered all kinds of musical styles. He lived in India for a time and became fluent in that country's classical music. He incorporates that into his jazz fusion efforts. CD Floating Point was nominated for a 2008 Grammy. Music for this jazz perspective comes from Floating Point and the CD Three Guitars. I'm Reese Erlich with a perspective on jazz.
We're still going to hear from trumpeter Claudio Roditi and vibraphonist Stefan Harris as we continue with part one of Jazz Journeys here on 88.3 FM WAER in celebration of Jazz Appreciation Month. Thank you.
Claudio Roditi combines the best of the 60s cool jazz trumpeters with the sensibility of his native Brazil. You can hear the influence of Miles Davis and Lee Morgan in his music, but his style is all his own. Roditi, who was born in 1946 in Rio de Janeiro, came of age when bossa nova was still new in Brazil.
Bossa nova was a music that basically belonged to the singers, guitarists, pianists, composers. So people that played an instrument like a trumpet or a trombone, saxophone, they played a different kind of music in those days. What we called samba jazz there in the period. Now because of the 50 years of, it's considered the 50 years ago, the birth of bossa nova, they started to celebrate the music again, and as a matter of fact, they have been discovering some of the composers of that period, and they've been promoting them.
Roditi studied at the famous Berklee College of Music in Boston and then moved to New York to join the jazz scene. He plays not only trumpet, but the rotary valve flugelhorn, an instrument usually associated with European classical music.
If you look on the back cover of my latest CD for Resonance Records, I'm playing a rotary valve flugelhorn there. And the rotary valves are instruments that are used in the symphony orchestras in Germany and Austria. It's a valve that looks just like a French horn valve. It moves sideways instead of up and down like a piston. So you look at the horn and it looks like it's horizontal instead of vertical.
Roditi has developed a unique trumpet sound, something that's not so easy to do. It's a combination of technical ability and inner feeling. I asked him how musicians develop their own sound.
That's a very good question. When we examine the history of jazz trumpet, we look in the 50s and everybody that was playing basically had their own sound, their own style. It's just the way you feel, the way you think. But I give you the example of the voice, it's exactly the same thing. When we hear back on tape, your voice doesn't sound like mine. We can all speak and sound like ourselves, you know. Like people are not preoccupied with that element in their playing nowadays. I was just thinking about this a couple of days ago. Yeah, if you play me, many of the jazz trumpet players of today, I will have a hard time, you know, pointing out who they are. And it's not that they don't play great, they play good. They have range, they have a good tone, but that personal thing, I don't hear too often. Thank you.
Roditi works hard on developing his sound. That means paying attention not only to what he plays, but where he records. His CD, Brazilians Times 4, was recorded at the sound studio of George Klabin in Beverly Hills before a live audience.
He has a concert, he records the concert with an audience of 50, 60 people. And the next day, you can go back to the same place without audience and re-record things that you listen and you analyze what you like, what you didn't like. And the fact is that we left from the live date only two songs on the album. What happens to a lot of people, I've heard that this happened already in his studio, is that sometimes because there's a live audience, the musicians overextend their solos. So they go to listen to the next day and they say, well, but this is too long. So some of that we try to condense and make some changes that way too.
Music for this jazz perspective comes from Claudio Roditi's CD, Brilliance Times 4, on Resonance Records. I'm Reese Ehrlich with a perspective on jazz.
The final artist we're going to hear from on this episode of Jazz Journeys is young vibraphonist Stefan Harris. A graduate of the Manhattan School of Music, Stefan has released 7 critically well-regarded albums as a leader, in addition to his work with David Sanchez and Christian Scott on the album 90 Miles, which was recorded in Havana, Cuba. Let's learn a little bit more about that project and Harris's thoughts on the appreciation Cubans have for music in general.
Hi, this is vibraphonist Stefan Harris.
Stefan Harris broke into national fame with his 1999 CD, Black Action Figure, and has produced a series of excellent CDs ever since. I caught up with Harris at the Montreal Jazz Festival, where he told me about his recent travels to Cuba. Harris, Christian Scott, and David Sanchez recorded an exciting CD with Cuban musicians called 90 Miles. This was Stefan Harris's first trip to Cuba. He performed with Cuban bandleader Harold Lopez Nussa.
Music, in my opinion, is just a sonic representation of culture, of the people. What I found inspiring was to see that music means a lot to people there. It's not just a form of entertainment. They totally let go. There is so much joy in the hearts of the musicians that we played with when we were there. It was completely infectious. I would look over at Harold Lopez Nussa and see that bright smile. It just inspired me, and the connection was absolutely amazing.
The U.S. government held up permission for Harris and his group to visit Cuba for nearly a year. Musicians from every other part of the world can record in Cuba, but U.S. musicians are severely restricted because of the 1962 U.S. economic embargo against the island. I asked Harris his opinion of the embargo, known in Cuba as an economic blockade.
What I love most about being able to go to Cuba now, before there is a dramatic change, is I got a chance to see it in that form of government in a more authentic state before it's been assimilated into this world culture. So in assessing a culture, I think it's important to be able to see it in an authentic state. So I appreciated that. In terms of the embargo, I don't understand it. It doesn't really make any sense to me. It seems like it's outdated and should have been gotten rid of many, many years ago.
topped the charts for one of his most popular tunes, Black Action Figure, and let the Cuban musicians figure out how to add new rhythms. He has a deep appreciation for Afro-Cuban music, but didn't pretend to be fluent in Cuban style.
Going to play another form of music, it behooves you to really understand the culture, to take the extra step, to learn the language. So for me, I actually played in salsa bands in New York many years ago, and I learned to speak Spanish a few years ago. I'm still learning, of course, and studied some congas and studied some clave. So I wasn't completely going at it as a beginner, but at the same time, I in no way made an attempt to play in an authentic Cuban style. It's for me to bring my voice and my life experience, and it's the mixture of cultures that really is a testament to the beauty of art. You can come from completely different backgrounds and come together and count a tune off 1, 2, 3, 4, and immediately the four of you or five of you become one.
Stefan Harris was born in 1973, and now reaching middle age, he's become a master of straight-ahead jazz and blues. Now he's added Caribbean spice as well. Music for this jazz perspective comes from the Concord CD, 90 Miles. Reporting from the Montreal Jazz Festival, I'm Reese Ehrlich with a perspective on jazz.
Well, we hope you enjoyed part one of Jazz Journeys as WAER celebrates Jazz Appreciation Month. Please join us a week from tonight, April 26th, from 9 to 10 p.m. for part two, as we'll spotlight John Scofield, George Shearing, Wayne Shorter, and others. And don't forget, more of Jazz Perspectives with Reese Ehrlich is available at jazzcorner.com/interviews, INNERVIEWS. Until next time, I'm music director Eric Cohen, reminding you that jazz might only be four letters, but it has endless possibilities. Take care.